Hello, and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Katie Halper.
I'm Mary Matte. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Please go there to support the show. And welcome back. We've taken a little bit of a break. It's summertime. We're both on the go. Things are happening. But it's great to be here once again with you.
Yeah, it's very grounding to be back. Useful Idiots is like my touchstone in a chaotic world. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right. Katie, you're on the road. What are you up to?
What I'm up to is something pretty exciting, if I do say so myself. I'm starting work on a new documentary, and it's about Holocaust survivors who are speaking out against the genocide.
In Gaza.
Holocaust survivors speaking out against the genocide in Gaza, right? Not genocide in general, or not the genocide of the Nazi genocide. But yes, the genocide in Gaza, because Israel weaponizes the Holocaust so much, I thought it would be important to get these people's reactions and also capture them while they're still with us. I just interviewed a 91-year-old Belgian man, Jacques Boud, who's amazing. His story is amazing. He was, his parents were killed in Auschwitz, tragically, and then he was sent to Israel and hated Israel. So his story is really fascinating.
Yeah, you know, it's not very well known, but after the Nazi Holocaust, there was an effort to basically get as many survivors as possible to go to Israel, when many people wanted to actually come to the U.S. and other places. But the, whatever you want to call them, the Zionist lobby in the U.S. essentially worked to keep them out and make sure that they instead would go off to Palestine, including to fight people and displace Palestinians from their homes. It's a really tragic history that
it really is. Yeah.
But there's a book about it by a McGill University professor, an Israeli actually, who wrote about all this. But that's one aspect of this that's not very well known.
Which one? Which book?
It's called "In the Shadow of the Holocaust: The Struggle Between Jews and Zionists in the Aftermath of World War II" by Yosef Grodzinski. So there you go. It's really it just continues to show that Zionism is a threat to Jewish people, because in this case, the book is about Zionists basically keeping out Holocaust survivors from emigrating to safety in places like North America, and instead shipping them off to Palestine, forcing them to basically be a part of this ethno-colonial project in Palestine, when a lot of them really did not want to do that. They wanted to just live peaceful lives, but they weren't given that choice.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And one of the things that Jacques, who I interviewed, brought up, and other people who are the children of survivors have brought up, is how much Israel hated the Yiddish language, and they banned it. They even, someone I know talked about how there was a raid on a Yiddish language version of Hamlet. The Israelis raided it. So anyway, fascinating history. Alrighty. Well, thanks for indulging me, Aaron, and thanks for indulging me, Useful Idiots fans. That's my update. And I should mention to Useful Idiots viewers in the Dublin area, I'm doing a live taping of the Katie Halper Show on July 24th at 7 p.m. at the Fumbally Stables, F-U-M-B-A-L-L-Y Stables in Dublin. It's going to be great. The show will focus on the connection between Palestine and Ireland. Special guests include Tadhg Hickey, the great comedian, Danny Morrison, who is the secretary of the Bobby Sands Trust, and Palestinian academic Asad Abushark, with music by Aziz Abushark and Sean Milrooney. So make sure, if you're in the area, you come out to that. And proceeds will go to the Freedom Flotilla.
Very cool. So that's the Katie Halper Show live in Dublin, and we'll put a link to the tickets in the show description.
Yeah.
Let's get to our four basic food groups. For Democrats suck, we're going to turn to the suckiest Democrat in chief. That's Joe Biden. Things just get bleaker and bleaker for Joe Biden. People are turning on him left and right from his own party. His poll numbers are cratering. And he keeps saying the most deranged things, not just having, you know, cognitive lapses, flubbing over his words, but saying outright deranged, demonic things. And this one, I think, actually takes the cake.
By the way, I'm the guy that did more for the Palestinian community than anybody. I'm the guy that opened up all the assets. I'm the guy that made that sure that I got the Egyptians to open the border to let good goods through, medicine and food. And what's happening is, And I'm the guy that's been able to pull together the Arab states to help, agree to help the Palestinians with food and shelter. I'm the guy. And so it's not, I mean, I've been.
I mean, what can you say about him at this point? He's not just cognitively impaired. He's deranged. He is presiding over a mass murder campaign. He's provided the weapons, the diplomatic cover, everything possible to let Israel kill tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people at this point. We don't even know because we don't bother to count how many people have been killed with U.S. weapons in Gaza. And he's claiming now that he's the guy who's done more for Palestinians than anybody else. It's one of the most insane statements I've ever heard in human history, and racist too, because you have to basically not consider like to look at this death toll of we don't even know how many people, which Biden has facilitated, and then say I'm the guy who's done the most for them. It means he doesn't see them as human beings, or he's just completely out to lunch and his brain doesn't work at all. Either way, it's just unbelievable. And yet stuff like this doesn't cause a media controversy. Like, he'll flub his words, he'll say something stupid. Obviously he had the meltdown at the debate. That's weeks and weeks and weeks of controversy. This, he says something this racist and unhinged, it's not a controversy at all.
Right. No, it's not embarrassing. It's not something that anyone has to run cover for. It's just a comment.
Right. And it's so crazy. It speaks for itself. And we have so many more months left of this campaign. I shudder to think what else is going to come out of Joe Biden's mouth. But that's this moment we're in right now. What do we have for Republican Suck?
Well, for Republican Suck, let's take a listen and a watch and see and hear what Vivek Ramaswamy had to say at the RNC. And of course, Vivek Ramaswamy is a former presidential candidate for the Republican Party.
And our message to Gen Z is this. You're going to be the generation that actually saves this country. You want to be a rebel? You want to be a hippie? You want to stick it to the man? Show up on your college campus and try calling yourself a conservative. Say you want to get married, have kids, teach them to believe in God and pledge allegiance to their country. Because you know what? Fear has been infectious in this country, but courage can be contagious too. That too is what it means to be an American.
I'm not sure he knows what it means to be a hippie. I don't think you'd make a very successful hippie if you stood up and said, I'm a conservative.
Yeah, I don't think he gets it either. And it's a very kind of retro way of talking. I don't even think the kids these days talk about wanting to be hippies. You know,
yeah,
he's kind of living in the 1960s here.
Yeah, totally.
But I mean, listen, I mean, who's he talking to? He's talking to the kids who bravely put themselves on the line to protest mass murder in Gaza and got attacked for it at college encampments across the country. And he's saying the real rebellious thing to do would be to be a conservative. And I just, you know, again, a conservative who wants to ban abortion, wants to ban gay marriage. I don't think you're going to find that much currency, that much appeal among young people on college campuses, Vivek.
But he's obviously, Aaron, I don't know, he does seem to have his finger on the pulse of the young people who want to be hippies.
All right, for Isn't That Weird, let's turn to the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. Trump, who came literally within an inch of his life, had he not turned his head at the exact moment when the shots were fired, he likely would have been killed. It's really incredible he survived. Now, Republicans, they're handling this in a typical way. I mean, obviously, some Republicans are just, you know, saying the right things, be thankful that he survived, mourning the person who was killed. But other Republicans are seizing on this to basically advance their pet causes, including cracking down on diversity initiatives. So here, for example, is Congressmember Tim Burchett, who is blaming DEI for the Secret Service's lapses in protecting Trump.
How the hell did he get on top of that roof? If you look at the pictures, he didn't go through the top of the roof. There had to be a ladder or something. Somebody really dropped the ball. You've got a DEI, basically, a DEI initiative person who heads up our Secret Service. You know, she was working at Pepsi before this.
And DEI, for those who don't know, is diversity, equity, inclusion. And he's claiming that somehow that DEI initiative is responsible for the head of the Secret Service being in her job, but her name is Kimberly Cheadle.
She's an affirmative action hire.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, listen, that doesn't mean that she's above criticism. There is a lot to criticize in her handling of this. So, for example, she was giving an interview where she explained why the Secret Service didn't have anybody deployed to the sloped roof where the shooter fired from. And her answer was not very good. This is what she said.
Should that roof have been secure, period?
That building in particular has a sloped roof at its highest point. And so, you know, there's a safety factor that would be considered there, that we wouldn't want to put somebody up on a sloped roof. And so, you know, the decision was made to secure the building from inside.
So I think you can definitely criticize her for that. Obviously, a sloped roof didn't stop the shooter from being there. So I don't think it should stop the Secret Service. But to blame DEI for her hiring, I think is a stretch.
Yeah, she's a woman.
There obviously was plenty of incompetence going around there. And it's not as if she was responsible for overseeing every single detail of that operation. So I don't think you can blame just her, but that doesn't mean that she's above reproach. Republicans are also taking the opportunity to fearmonger about Iran, because right after this assassination attempt on Trump, U.S. intelligence came out with the claim that actually they had received warnings that Iran was trying to kill President Trump, even though, of course, there's no evidence at all connecting Iran to this alleged shooter, this young man from Pennsylvania who fired at Trump. But that hasn't stopped Republicans from basically trying to sound the alarm about Iran. So here, for example, is Congressmember Mike Turner.
This is based upon a known and continuous and existing threat from Iran to President Trump and members of his cabinet. This has been ongoing. It has certainly been an issue of needing increased security also for those former cabinet members. Now, I don't know this specific intelligence that shows that there's an increase or specific threat. They are in the process of briefing both myself and staff. But what thing is clear here is that President Biden needs to make clear that this would be an act of war, that clearly Iran would pay a horrible price for.
Okay, so
I really like how dramatic it is with that music. Background,
the RNC convention music. So look, I mean, you have the president of the U.S. almost losing his life. It's an obvious lapse of the Secret Service, and not just the head of the Secret Service, but you know, a lot of people at the Secret Service. But yeah, Republicans are seizing the moment to say basically, if Iran did this, it would be an act of war, when of course there's no evidence that Iran was connected at all, right? Because this appears to be just a lone white young gunman with issues. So Republicans seizing the moment to go after DEI and also try to stoke war with Iran.
It's a 2-for-1.
Yeah, it's a 3-for-1, because they also get that incredible image of Trump with his fist raised in the aftermath of the shooting, you know, with his cheek bloodied. So they get, you know, arguably now the most iconic campaign photo of all time, plus the opportunity to go after their favorite targets, Iran and diversity initiatives.
Plus, they got to break up Tenacious D, because one member of Tenacious D made a joke about Trump, and Jack Black responded by calling off the tour and no longer working with him. Kyle Gass. And of course, Tenacious D is they don't like Trump, obviously. So the Republicans just got to neutralize an enemy.
Tenacious D taken out.
Yeah.
A huge taken victory out for Trump. Yeah.
Yeah. Trump may have survived the shooting, but Tenacious D did not. Hmm. Well, for isn't that terrible? We're sticking with the RNC, and let's take a look at this clip, which is of the West Virginia governor, Jim Justice's dog, baby dog.
I know that a lot of you want to meet my little buddy. So if baby dog could come on out here. As the world watches, you didn't really expect that, did you? But with that being said, let me just say just this. She makes us smile, and she loves everybody. And how could the message possibly be any more simpler than just that?
I mean, there are a couple of things I object to there. First of all, I think it's exploitative of Baby Dog, even though Baby Dog is adorable. And Baby Dog, by the way, is a 60-pound bulldog, English bulldog. But I don't know what Baby Dog's politics are, and I'm not confident that Jim Justice does either. So I think it's kind of like, remember when Sarah Palin trotted around her baby at the convention? This is kind of similar to that. I do think Baby Dog is really cool, really cute, but I think it's inappropriate to use Baby Dog like that.
Well, Kate, I'm trying to put you on blast here, but I mean, you've been known to show your fans your dog, Bodhi.
It's true.
And are you sure you know that Bodhi is on board with your
yeah.
you know, brand of left-wing politics? She could be a Zionist for all we know, right?
I mean, you're right, Aaron. She could be a Zionist. She could be a PEP, P-P-E-P, progressive pooch, except for Palestine.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? It's fair for you to put me on blast, Aaron. I think that, the truth is, I think Baby Dog is a feminist, and I think Baby Dog doesn't like the Republicans. And of course, Baby Dog is a female, and for Republicans, that means she's a DEI dog.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Republican would say she got that spot because she's a female dog.
Mm-hmm.
DEI dog, yeah.
What I like about Jim Justice is, well, first of all, his nickname is Big Jim, which I just think is...
Baby Dog.
Yeah, and Trump loves to call him Big Jim. And his last name is Justice. Like, Big Jim Justice sounds like a wrestler name.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And Trump obviously has a history with wrestling. And in fact, at the convention, when he appeared for the first time after the assassination attempt, they basically had a shot of him walking from behind the scenes, from behind the stage. And it was like out of a wrestler. It was like out of WWE. Yeah. It was so... I just appreciate, as a former wrestling fan, the continuity between wrestling and the Trump-led GOP. And Big Jim bringing out his dog, that's all a part of it, you know?
Yeah.
As a fan, it's entertaining. It is.
So I guess I'm torn, but there's, again, as someone who loves dogs, I can't help but think that she just strikes me as a progressive.
Hmm.
She gives off progressive vibes.
Hmm.
She's unapologetic. She's big. She won't be body shamed. That's my terrible. But it's also very positive because I'm glad I got to meet Baby Dog because she's so cute. And those are our four basic food groups. But boy, oh boy, do we have a great interview. Not but, and boy, oh boy, do we have a great interview for you. We are interviewing none other than the legend, the activist, the musician, Roger Waters. Welcome back, Roger Waters. Thank you so much for joining.
I couldn't be happier than I am to be here with both of you, two heroes of mine.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Not at all.
We didn't even have to bribe Roger to say that.
No.
So tell us what you were just doing in England.
I went to England for a couple of weeks in order to because there was a general election, and I went there specifically to support some independent candidates standing in important constituencies against the Labour Party candidate. We could write off the Tory candidates, the Conservative Party, in this particular election, because we've just had 14 years of absurd Tory rule. And so it was obvious the Labour Party is going to be the next government. I supported a man called Feinstein, Andrew Feinstein, standing in Holborn and St. Pancras against the execrable Keir Starmer. And he got a very decent vote. Keir Starmer's vote went from 30,000 majority to 10,000 majority. No, it didn't, because it was halved. He had a 20,000 majority, and that is now halved to a 10,000 majority. So that was something of a result. And the others were Craig Murray, who was standing in Blackburn, who also did very well, though it's interesting to see what will happen there, because there's some dispute about the result of that election. Let's not go into it. It's a waste of our time. I went up there for a day to campaign with and for it, which was fabulous. It was really lovely. We sort of stood lonely as two clouds on a street corner in the middle of Blackburn and spoke to some of the local people. And basically, I sort of stood there getting people to come in and take selfies with me. Once they figured out that I wasn't just some old bloke shouting at the traffic, that I used to be in the Pink Floyds, you know, they were happy to come in. And I was buying votes for Craig Murray by selling selfies on the street, which felt like proper. It felt like a proper thing to be doing. Anyway, so we had a lovely day and we had a very good meeting, which you can find on YouTube, because somebody from Double Down or somebody from somewhere filmed it. And so it's Craig and I waxing eloquent. And then I interviewed two wonderful young women in London. One's called Leanne Mohammed. She was standing in North Ilford and she came within a hair of unseating Wes Streeter, who is now the Minister for Health in the new Labour government. She came within 527 votes. They both got 15,000 and an odd. He got 527 more. I know that we, the supporters of Leanne Mohammed, had suggested to the Green Party that they should stand their candidate down, because if they did, she would have beaten Wes Streeter in a straight race. She would now be the MP, Leanne Mohammed, and she will be in the future. She's in her mid-20s, this woman, and she's a remarkable young. Again, you can see me interviewing her. It's on YouTube. So, and the other one, who's even more of a firebrand, is Fiona Lally, and she stood in Stratford and Bow, another London constituency. I've interviewed, I won't say any more about them. Watch the interviews. These are, God, they give me hope. They're like 25 or 3 or 20 or something. They're very young, and they are saying and doing all the right things. Lally became famous overnight, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when she spoke to a Tory cabinet minister. I think maybe she was Home Secretary, Suella something or other. And Lally tied her in, I can't say the F word, effing knots. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing to see. So anyway, that's what I was doing in England. And I did a gig in a church with Loki, who's a rapper from London, and very well known for not just his music and his rapping, but he's from Grenfell. You know where there's a tower that burned down in a project in London or whatever. So I did it with him, with somebody who used to be called Cat Stevens, who's now called Yusuf Islam. But on the gig, for this gig we did, he called himself Yusuf Cat Stevens.
Oh.
So anyway, he's always, I love him, Yusuf. And it was a beautiful evening. We had 600 or 700 people in a church, all trying to free Palestine with every bone in our body as hard as we could. That's also on Double Down. So if anybody's in, that's my dog barking in the background.
Very enthusiastic supporter.
Yeah,
of she's these, saying, insurgent candidates.
The dog says free, free, like that. She can't say Palestine.
Right.
I'm going to teach her to bark from the river to the sea, if I can. But it's not that easy. She's a Staffy Chihuahua mix, so she's not very good at learning English. Aaron's looking at me like puzzled now. I'm sorry, I get diverted very easily.
When Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, he already had 3 missed calls from Chuck Norris.
We all know the man, the myth, and the legend of Chuck Norris. But did you know that in his 80s, he's still alive and kicking butt? Either that, or death is too afraid to tell him the news. Chuck wants to share with you what gives him so much energy to work out, stay active, and keep up with his grandkids. He did this just by making one change. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s.
And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/useful for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/useful.
This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Well, how similar is the situation in England to the situation in the United States when it comes to politicians, the main parties? Like, we have the Democrats and Republicans. They in England have the Labour and Tory. And in America, there's basically no difference when it comes to Palestine. What's it like in England on this issue?
It's exactly the same, except one of the independent candidates who stood in North Islington is the ex-leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, who was ousted from his position as the leader of the Labour Party in 2019 by the Israeli lobby and their acolytes in England, the chief mover of whom was Sir Keir Starmer, believe it or not. Do the Israelis have a firmer grip on the political situation in England than they do? It's probably about the same. I mean, AIPAC owns Congress, as we know, quite openly, and they all admit it. And all members of Congress, they all admit it as well. You know, we've all seen those documentaries about, who's that Republican? Is it Massey, the one who's come out and said, everybody has an AIPAC guy in their pocket? No, they're in his pocket. And whenever they come to a vote or anything in Congress, the AIPAC guy leans down to his pocket and says, you do know which way you're voting, don't you? And the congressperson says, yes, I do. Thank you for helping me out. You know, and please keep sending me the donation. And that's the way it effing works. And it's disgusting. You know, when I did Rogan a couple of years ago, I actually started watching it. And then I thought, I can't watch this. It's 3 hours long. But it was actually, I was enjoying it until I thought, no, I've got other things I have to do. But there's a bit in it where I said to him that after a couple of hours, I said, what would you do, Joe Rogan? And before I'd even finished, he said, take money out of politics. And I thought, well, good for you. You've said something. I mean, I'm not saying he's not an idiot, Joe Rogan. He often talks to idiots, but he can sort of connect dots a little bit. And he just went, and when I said, what's your second thing? He went back and he went, that's the number one thing. And how right is he? It's absurd that you can buy an election, isn't it? You could call that many things. Well, you can call it a plutocracy, a kleptocracy, an oligarchy, but you cannot call that a democracy. It isn't. That means that poor people do not have anything to do with any of it. And that is the situation you've got. It's not quite as bad as that in England. We have a different system. We don't have an electoral college, which is the first thing that you have to get rid of. Two things in America immediately. One is Citizens United, which is Rogan's point, and the other is the Electoral College, which means that the popular vote is meaningless. Right. They've figured out how to put whoever they want in power, and they will continue to do so until there is a revolution. Is the revolution just around the corner? I effing hope so. But it's so hard to tell, isn't it? The vice-like grip that they have through Rupert Murdoch and others on everybody You speak about it a lot. Our friend Caitlin Johnson from Melbourne, Australia, writes about that and almost nothing else.
Yeah.
Every morning.
Yeah.
When she's not weeping over exploded babies in Gaza, she's talking about how brain dead we all have become by being diverted from the important thing. So her piece yesterday morning was two Americans walking down the street, and all they can talk about is the fact that Donald Trump's got an owie on his ear, and it was probably an assassination attempt. And they're doing that as they're stepping over the shattered bodies of Gazan babies.
Yeah.
They're picking their way through puddles of broken bones and blood, not to mention the hepatitis C that is now, I'm told, running absolutely rife through Gaza, because it's not just starvation now and bombing to death. It's also the spread of disease is going to become a terrible, terrible killer. And yet, all we can think about is Trump's owie. And that we are all, well, we're not here, thank goodness, but everybody in America is subjected to this 24/7 obsession with the idea that any of this Democrat-Republican conversation is relevant to real people living real lives. It's completely irrelevant. That's why it's called the Overton window. And that's why they feed it to us relentlessly, pretending that we give a shit whose fault it was that they didn't put somebody on the sloping roof. You know, give me a break. What would have happened if he'd aimed a bit better and shot Trump through the front of the head? Nothing. There'd be another puppet there instead. It doesn't make any difference. And this is what it's very, very difficult to figure out for yourself if you're an American citizen, in my view. Obviously, you still figured it out. And what we have to do is make Aaron Marte and Katie Halper the majority. Everybody has to be you. And if everybody was you, they wouldn't be there. Biden and Trump wouldn't be anywhere ever. Because they're lunatics and they shouldn't be anywhere that we ever see them. They should. I tell you, years ago, I wrote a song called The Fletcher Memorial Home. And I actually made a little video, or rather my brother-in-law made a video about it. And you see them wandering around. It's like Margaret Thatcher and Galtieri wandering around playing croquet on a lawn somewhere, but they're safely under lock and key. They are the home for, they're in this, the Fletcher Memorial, home for incurable tyrants and kings.
Yeah.
I know you both heard Biden yesterday saying, I rule the world. Wow.
And going back to Jeremy Corbyn, you know, the one time in recent memory where we actually have a candidate in a, you know, major NATO country who actually represents ordinary people's interests, he gets subjected to an unprecedented smear campaign and a sabotage attempt, as you mentioned, from within his own party.
Right.
You know, he was just a few thousand votes away from being the prime minister, but people in his own party sabotaged him and came up with this manufactured smear campaign that he was an anti-Semite. And I'm wondering, Roger, as someone who's dealt with a similar smear effort against you, you've been smeared as an anti-Semite because you support Palestinian rights. What do you think about Jeremy Corbyn's handling of all that? Because whereas you have always been forceful in saying this is a complete scam by the Israel lobby, Jeremy Corbyn tried to take a middle ground approach. He never forcefully called it out as the scam that it was. And I've always thought that hurt him more than it helped him.
You were right, in my view. At the time, 2019, the Labour Party conference, one of the items on the agenda of that conference was the new, as it was then, IHRA, International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, definition of anti-Semitism. And when I saw that that was on the agenda, I was expecting Corbyn to make a stirring speech saying it was absolute, complete rubbish and it had to be nowhere near the Labour Party conference because it was nonsense. And he didn't. He was sort of faintly apologetic And at the time, I can remember going,
And the IHRA, of course, one of the things it does is it claims that criticism of Israel or calling Israel racist is anti-Semitism, which in itself is anti-Semitic because it's the dual loyalty trope and is suggesting that the state of Israel represents all Jews, which isn't only wrong, isn't only anti-Semitic, but also puts Jews in actual danger. Because as Israel is broadcasting its crimes against humanity, it would be nice if people didn't think they were doing it for us.
Yeah. You know, I'm a fan of Jeremy Corbyn's, but in that instance, there and then, in that time, that very important time in 2019, it was super important that he became revolutionary and that he stood up to them and that he told them to F off and said, this is, and he didn't. He was conciliatory. He tried to apologize his way out of it and it killed him. And those 600,000 new members of the Labour Party that had joined the Labour Party because of his stand on basic issues of human rights, exactly the platform we all stand on and talk about all the time, Paris 1948, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, equal human rights, all our brothers and sisters, irrespective of their ethnicity or religion or nationality, from the river to the sea, and also from Africa to North America to South America to Australia, everywhere. And that's it. That's our plan. He didn't do that. And so I'm glad he's back. I'm glad he will be a voice in Parliament representing the people of North East Lincolnshire. I wish Andrew Feinstein was in Parliament representing the people of Holborn and St Pancras. My speeches to them were always, you, the people of Holborn and St Pancras, have an opportunity now to take part in the existential battle for the human soul that Aaron and Katie and I are in, and millions, billions of people all over the world are engaged in this battle because we care about right and wrong and we care about human rights and we care about our brothers and sisters, right? You didn't. A lot of you went and still voted for Keir Starmer, who is a Nazi. But he's a self-serving career Nazi. He would do anything. He'll tell any lie. He will adopt anything, any posture, any position that he thinks can give him power and influence. And this is well known, and it's all over here. It's not in any of the mainstream media, but it's all over independent media.
What's interesting also mentioning, speaking of Andrew Feinstein, we had him on Useful Idiots. And what's interesting about Andrew Feinstein is that he's a very outspoken critic of Israel. And it's a little harder to call him an anti-Semite because he's the son of a Holocaust survivor. But of course, people will call him a self-loathing Jew. But what's fascinating is that he worked for Mandela. He lived in South Africa and he really has, you know, firsthand experience with apartheid.
He went to prison for it in South Africa. So yeah, he knows all about that. The problem is that the real actual narrative of what's happened, not just in the Second World War, not just what's happening now, but everything that's happened is in the hands of Rupert Murdoch and his colleagues in the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and the London Times and the Manchester Guardian and the rest of them. Okay, so the narrative is in their hands and they decide what should be. And it's in the hands of the TV stations, all of them, the whole mainstream. And they are selling the idea that this is just normal. And so when you look at the scenario of what's happening to us all now, and this is the existential battle for the human soul, we are heading towards World War III very, very fast. This is mainly in the Ukraine. The Ukraine, in my view, is even more dangerous than the Holy Land is at the moment, because the lunatics who are the leaders of our countries in the West are trying to weaken Russia. Why? Because do they want to defeat Russia in a world war, or do they hate the Russian people? What's the point of the Russian folk? And then when they've done that, they want to go on to the Chinese, because like the lunatic Joe Biden, they think they rule the world.
Yeah.
Wake up, guys. No, you don't. You have got more weapons and more nuclear weapons than the rest of the world put together. But in a nuclear war, that doesn't make any difference. We're all dead. So why you are trying to turn Ukraine into a member of NATO when this is this conversation has been going on for at least 20 years. I think it was in 2007 in Munich that Putin said, we need to talk to one another. We need to figure out a new security apparatus for Europe as a whole, and particularly Eastern Europe. And part of that security needs to address the security both of the Ukrainian people and the Russian people. And we have to figure this out, because you did promise. And you and I don't know why I'm telling you this, because you know all of this about the...
Well, you know, Roger, what's amazing is when Putin said that, you're right, in Munich in 2007, when he made that speech and said, you know, we can't have Western hegemony anymore. You have to take our concerns seriously. That's when Putin became the number one enemy in Russia, when he basically called for diplomacy, cooperation. All of a sudden, he became a tyrant, an autocrat. We can't work with him ever. That's when he became enemy number one. It's unbelievable.
Yes, it is unbelievable. I got a letter this morning. I'm blurting this out now. Probably shouldn't, but I'm going to. From Medvedev. What's he in the Russian government now? He's something or other. He was prime minister a few years ago.
He was, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They've approached me this morning asking me to go and play music to Russian troops in Ukraine. Exactly. And obviously I'm going to say, are you effing stupid? Why would I do that? You know, I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing that I've heard so far this morning. So the answer, Mr. Medvedev, is notwithstanding the fact that I, although it was illegal and I condemn it unreservedly and blah, 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 the invasion of the Ukraine, I understand why you started that special military operation. And also, I've watched what's happened since, and all the emails I sent to Mrs. Zelenska and others in the Ukraine saying, you should stop this now and go back to the Minsk Accords, which I did 2 years ago in April 2022. And I was right, and I'm still right. It's insane that you've been slaughtering Russian and Ukrainian young men, middle-aged men now. It'll be babies soon, because there won't be any young men left. But why have you been doing it? At the behest of Joe Biden, who thinks he rules the world? Are you insane?
That's so sad.
The problem is he has people in Ukraine who are just as insane as he is, the Azov Battalion, to name but one small bunch, who don't care about fighting to the last Ukrainian because they have baggage from the Second World War that they haven't yet figured out, that they cannot be the supreme beings in the world and everybody else be scum. It's exactly the same problem as with the state of Israel. Sorry, go on. I interrupted.
Well, it's amazing, Roger. So in April 2022, you wrote to the Zelenskys urging them to accept peace. That was at a time when the Ukrainian government was actually negotiating with Russia and Turkey, and we now know they were so close to a peace deal. But unfortunately, that same month, Zelensky took the advice of another famous British national. That's Boris Johnson, who went over and told him to keep fighting and we're not going to make a deal with Putin. And if only he had listened to you, the world would have been a much different place and hundreds of thousands of people would still be alive.
It's funny you should say that. I don't know if you watched Piers Morgan, and he had two raging IDF zealots, and then he had you, and who was the fourth?
Gideon Levy.
And then you had Gideon, which is why I'm bringing it up. Yeah. And Gideon didn't say a word for about 10 minutes. And then when he did say a word, he said, when I heard that news or when I read that piece in Haaretz, I sent an email to Koblovsky, or whatever the journalist's name was, who had reported that the Hannibal Directive had been issued by the Israeli High Command on October the 7th.
After Yaniv Kubovich published his scoop, I SMS'd him. I sent him a text message asking, so Roger Waters was right.
And he said, when I read that, I wrote to him and said, maybe Roger Waters was right all along. Because I was vilified for speaking out about October the 7th. And all I said, and this was to Glenn Greenwald, was, I really want to know what actually happened. And for that, they wouldn't let me stay in a hotel all over South America. He's a raging right. anti-Semite. You can That's hear right. it. He wants yeah. to know what actually happened. And now it turns out that I was completely right. When I saw those piles of cars, I went, shit, they killed all those people.
The Israelis did, yep. They did. Yep.
Hamas did not have Apache helicopters and Hellfire yep. missiles.
That's right.
They just didn't. Anyway.
And Gideon Levy, who's a very courageous person, Israeli journalist, he wrote an article basically criticizing you, Roger, an open letter to you, because you raised – questions that turned out to be 100% correct. Did Israel yeah. kill its own people on October 7th? Now we know the Israeli media has confirmed this. The and Israeli military sources have confirmed this, that the order on October 7th was to turn that area around Gaza into a killing zone to prevent Palestinian militants from taking Israelis captives. And so it was totally fair for you to speculate that Israel killed its own people, because they've confirmed that they did. And had they listened to you or people like Max Blumenthal and Ali Abu Nima, this would have been widely understood a long time ago. And yeah. Gideon Levy gave you that acknowledgement much too late, but it was good to see him do that.
Gideon doing that the other day, I'm almost in tears now, because that was like him reaching through the screen and putting his arms around me and saying, I love you, my brother. I was wrong. You were right. When he criticized me for yeah. not, he went to Kibbutz Eri
yeah.
2 days after, and he saw all of that, but he assumed that it was Hamas, A, and B, he believed the Zaka stories about yep. women rape and breasts used as footballs and all that, which we now know. Well, we don't know. Nobody knows anything. It's possible the earth is flat. But as far as all the evidence goes, we know that there were all lies. Not a single Israeli woman, as far as we know, was sexually assaulted on October the 7th, 2020. Not one. There's no evidence to support even one. No babies were killed. That little girl who was killed in that particular kibbutz was killed by an Israeli tank shell
yeah.
along with 13 other Israelis when they were just blowing up a house because they knew there were some Palestinians in it. So maybe eventually the whole story will come out. It remains to be seen.
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiotspodcast.com.
As always, a great, inspiring time with Roger Waters. Freewheeling discussion.
Yeah, so much to look forward to. He's got a new album he's working on, a memoir, and a concert film. And that's very exciting. And the man is 80 years old. Compare him to Joe Biden, who is older. Than Roger, and it's like night and day. If only we had people like Roger
yeah.
leading us rather than Joe Biden. But very grateful to Roger, as always, for taking the time to join us, and we hope people enjoyed it.
Yeah, and to see the full interview, of course, go to usefulidiotspodcast.com. And don't forget to come on out to the Katie Halper Show live taping at Fumbly Stables in Dublin, July 24th at 7 p.m., and the link to that show is in the description.
All right, that's our show. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time. Thanks so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For extended episodes, bonus content, and our weekly Thursday Throwdown episode, please subscribe at usefulidiotspodcast.com. Support the show for free by subscribing on YouTube, Rumble, and wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the podcast, don't forget to rate and review. can also follow us on Twitter at Useful Idiot Pod. Thanks for supporting independent media. We'll see you next time.